Shalom, good morning. This is Radio Shalom coming to you through Planet FM 104.6. Shalom, Udi.
Shalom, Joan. Good morning.
Well, we're delighted to have Udi back in the studio to continue the fascinating story of Jewish pirates in the Caribbean.
So, we'll start with his story. The best name for a Jewish pirate boat will be...
Queen Esther. You told me.
Queen Esther, you're right. But even better than that is Noah's Ark.
Right.
So we have the captain of Noah's Ark. We'll talk about Queen Esther later. Yeah. I won't forget it. I promise you, John.
So the first one you know of was Noah's Ark.
The one of the first. So we have a Jew named Sinan, okay, that his Spaniards' enemies is calling him the Grande Jew. Right, he's the great Jew that is taking vengeance of them. And he is one of the heads of the Muslim piracy trade routes or groups. The brothers Aruj and Khir ad-Din Barbosa. Now, why would Muslims go against the Spaniards?
They were not treated very well either.
Well, A, they were not treated very well, to say the least. And B, they also have an empire.
Because they were in Spain.
They were, and they were also expelled, exactly. Mm. But, and also, unlike the Jews, they had an empire, the Ottoman Empire, right? The Muslim Empire, Turkish Empire. And they've supported, as the British supported Christian pirates, they supported the Muslim pirates against Christian destinations in general and Spanish in particular. And in four Muslim triumph in the seas. Now, the Jews have no empire, right? They can't harbor their ship in a Jewish nation because there was no Jewish nation back then. So what they need to do, they need to be, is the allied. So last week we talked about a guy that was allied with the British, the Christian. But this Sinan, he is allied with the Muslims. He was born in Izmir, which is in Turkey, which is in the Turkish Empire.
So they would be speaking the same language.
He speaks the same language. He dressed the same, roughly. He has the same cultural motifs, the same culture, the same songs and so on. He is known as a fearless warrior, as one of the greatest naval strategists of the time. And he only plundered Christian vessels. Never touched a Muslim vessel because he was allied with the Muslims. The Muslims and the Jews had a common enemy, the Spaniards. So the Jewish pirates...
There's nothing like bonding together if you have a common enemy.
Exactly. There's common enemy will always bring the two,
sides together.
Exactly. His base was in Algeria. And he goes to the Sultan, Sultan Suleiman, which also, by the way, built the wall of Jerusalem, the old city. And so he goes to the Sultan and he tells them, I will be under your command. And he not only takes part in piracy, but also is occupying an island, the island of Finian, in the cross of Algeria, between Algeria and France, where Spain and Genoa from Italy, also Christian area, also Catholic, are sustaining a dominion for many years. So he's occupying them. So we have a Jewish captain
With land,
giving the land to a Muslim sultan. Something that today might sound a bit, far-fetched, but back then was...
No, you never know, it can still happen.
Exactly, history has its surprises. But back then was a normal reaction to what the Christian did to the Jews, unlike the Muslims, who were very tolerant towards them. A year later, in 1531, Sinan, with some other captains in the navy, are going against the Turks and not against the Christians. So that's another thing to know about pirates.
It's another element.
They're not to be trusted. Right? If somebody took piracy as a trade, most likely he is not the most loyal person to a ruler. Right? So now he switched his hide because he can gain more on another side. And he even cooperate with the people from Genoa for Catholic, you know, captains against the Khoisan, against the Turks. And in 1534, he's, you know, he's too wealthy, he's too powerful. So he takes vessels under his command to Tunisia. And he managed to occupy parts of Tunisia with his friends from before, Khir ad-Din Barbossa, remember, from the beginning. And Khir Barbossa becomes the Sultan of Tunisia. So now his friend is the Sultan. Amazing. Now, what do we do? The Spaniards are not happy with that. They're never happy with, you know, Muslims becoming rulers. Definitely not when they are aided by Jews. So in 1535, in the summer of 1535, a huge, huge navy group, so many ships, more than you can count, is blockading Tunisia. All the coasts are blockaded. And what do you do?
From the Turkish Empire.
From the local administration of this new sultan that was before a pirate, but it's Muslims anyway. It's connected to the empire. Now, what do you do? So the Muslims are saying, we need to have some leverage over those Christians. So what can we do? We can just slaughter all the Christians in Tunisia. We have Christian slaves, thousands and thousands of Christian slaves that they got in their voyages or in other ways. And we can just kill them. But Sinan refused to kill the slaves. Under Jewish law, you are allowed to have a slave. You're not allowed to kill your slave because it's not your property. It is your slave, but it's still a person. You're not allowed to slaughter him if you want to. So he refused. Now, the slaves were not too grateful to Sinan, and they're rebelling against Sinan and so on, and they are aiding the Christian navy to defeat the pirates. The pirates have to run away. They're fleeing the place, and they're going to the Baleare Islands, occupy it, and just demolish everything as a vengeance. Because that's another thing to know about pirates. You don't want to get them upset. They're not too moral about how they do warfare. Once they occupy land, they don't need land. They plunder it, they burn everything. That's what they done in the Baleare Islands. The next few islands, a few years, Sinan is going with other buccaneers and other captains to get the Turkish navy bigger. Because he understands Christians are not to be trusted. So this navy of his is, you know, when you give a pirate to rule over a part of your navy wouldn't be that organized. But it will, however, be able to sustain itself.
They have their methods.
So all across the Ionian, the Adriatic coasts and islands, you know, all the way between Turkey, Albania, and Greece, Croatia of today and so on, they plunder cities, they destroy cities. Unbelievable. And in 1538, Khir ad-Din Sinan and their allies are, again, occupying land from the Christians. In 1539, a year later, he occupies the city of Nuevo, very important city. He moved east, go to Suez, and he start to build his own navy because he thinks to himself, if by aiding the navy, I'm managing to do all the things, I might as well build my own navy, right? So in Suez, in Egypt, he builds a navy that is about to go to a war against Portugal.
So all the latest shipbuilding techniques.
Yeah. And that should be, you know, he is arranging it with the Muslims as a pre-attack in order to get the Portuguese out of India. Right? That's in 15.
In Goa.
Exactly. And
why India?
India is very important financially. It's the center of spices. It's the center of goods.
Jewelry,
silk, exotic animals, you know. And get things, all sorts of things.
So, in fact, they roamed the oceans wide.
Roamed wide, definitely. And he's not occupying Portugal, definitely, or Genoa, or Goa, but he definitely, the Portuguese are intimidated. So at least they're not attacking any Muslim cities in that time. Now, in 1550, he becomes so powerful, he becomes a governor of Algeria. He is now ruling over the entire place of Algeria, and his name now is Sinan Fecha. Fecha were the Turkish rulers. It will be like governor today, right? So he's the governor general of Algeria, a Jewish guy.
And who appoints him? He appoints himself?
So, look.
Is recognized by
it's a good question. I would say he's appointed by the Turks, by the Muslim Empire, and he's also recognized by them because he's powerful. Mm-hmm. Right? It's a
combination,
exactly. But, you know, you can say many things about pirates, but setting foot in a city and, you know, managing a sewer system and taxes, and that was, well, what person was too noisy to that person, is not really something they're interested to do. So very soon after, he goes back to being a pirate. He occupied Naples out of the Knights of Malta. Very, you know, Naples. In 1552, he beats another one and he goes back to Constantinople. 3 years later, in 1555, he dies. And he's buried in the Jewish cemetery of Albania. Many people attend his funeral. Tons of, you know, all Muslims, of course. On his tomb, they write, "Eventually, the fate took the body and redeemed him, even if it is the body of the captain on the Noah's Ark. When the great whale dive into its jaw, he..." And that's about Sinan, right? "When the great whale jump onto his jaw, he is taking the ocean in one sip. Sinan was a new Joseph. His enemies feared him as they feared death."
And that was in Arabic or in Hebrew?
It's a good question. I'm not sure, to be honest. I'm not sure. It's a good question. But in any case, you can see that, again, the influence of the Jews on the tolerance that the Muslims gave them is not only because of they were nice, but also because they had power. It's very
also the Muslim and the Jewish beliefs are very similar in some ways.
We like to think that everything is because beliefs are similar and everything is because of, you know, values, but power
is the ultimate value.
Is exactly. Now, another story. David Abarbanel, 1580, born in The Hague, in Holland, right? When he's 19, his father decides to immigrate to the new continent. New continent is America. They go next to the Americas and a Spaniard ship attacks them, right? Now, in the Netherlands, the Jews are equal, so they can decide to immigrate. They can do whatever they want. The Spaniards, even in the oceans, they are inquisitors. Okay, it's a global decree. Jews are not allowed anywhere the Spaniards are ruling. Since the Spaniards saw themselves as rulers of the ocean, Jews are not allowed in the ocean as well. And definitely not in Americas that it belonged to the Spaniards. The Dutch thought they belonged to the Dutch, but the Spaniards thought they belonged to the Spaniards. Anyway, they reached close ashore to the American coastline. And a Spaniard ship attacks him, and all his family, of David's Barbadan family, is being murdered, slaughtered. David runs away, or David, rather, he runs away, and he joins the British Navy. And he starts to have to join raids against Spaniard ships. Soon he becomes so, you know, powerful and good that he becomes a captain of a boat. And then they start calling him Captain Davis. not David, Davis, because the British wanted him. His new boat was named Jerusalem.
Right.
And he, for 10 years, for a whole decade, he was supposed, he had a decree, you know, he had a, from the King of England, to fight the British enemies in the Caribbean. And he did a marvelous, marvelous job. He plundered many Spaniard ships. He plundered many other ships that were not Spaniards, but were enemies of Britain, because pirates are also fighting each other. Unlike a Navy ship, which belongs to the Navy, a pirate ship could be working for the Navy, like North Ark, like Jerusalem, like other ships, but they are independent. So they're fighting each other as well for the right to get the, you know,
the spoils.
The spoils.
So they don't have to sign any oath of loyalty.
No. Definitely not. Now, unfortunately, in the 17th century, Captain Davis and his ship Jerusalem are going to the Atlantic Ocean, which is less recognized, and we don't know what happens to them. The ship disappears, probably lost in sea somewhere. However, legends, you know, continues to be told. Now, going to the Caribbean, you know, most Caribbean islands had a Jewish community, because it's not only that not all Jews became pirates. You know, some Jews became pirates, but some Jews just stayed ashore, stayed in and established a community.
From the pirate ships?
And from general ships that just voyage ships that passed in the area. Now, in Curaçao, for example, a Dutch island, or Netherland island, rather, we have dozens of Jews that are living in Curaçao, you know, at the island itself, and their trade is naval piracy. But they have a physical location on land, which is different the Northern Sea.
So they replenish the boats.
Exactly.
Marine stuff.
Exactly. And it is so common that is in 1753, there's a drasha by the rabbi. We have that drasha in writing. We know what exactly what it is. The rabbi is Joshua de Cordova, right?
Because so they're all from Spain.
All ran away from Spain. 99% of them. Yes, all ran away from Spain. And he, in his drasha, you know, rabbis in drashot can do many things. One of the things that are most popular is to tell off the community on their sins.
That hasn't changed.
Hasn't changed at all. But the nature of the sins in his community are very interesting. So he blames them in two things, I'm sorry. First, he's saying, how dare a Jewish pirate attack another Jewish pirate ship?
Not done.
How? That is not heard of.
Right.
That a Jew will go against a Jew. And he, you know, staunched them about that. How impossible to comprehend why a Jewish pirate would go against his own flesh and blood, his own Jew, right? And he goes another, and he says, not only that, but also when Spaniards are attacking other Jewish ships, Jewish pirates, you are not helping them. So this is very interesting, because we can see here an evolution of the Jewish piracy. Mm. We said in the beginning Jewish piracy is a type of vengeance. It's an ideological move. Jews are going against the Spaniards because the Spaniards kicked them out, basically killed them families. You know, in 1753, it's already 150 years after Jewish piracy was predominant, 200 years after, you know, the expulsions began, Inquisition began. People start to forget why they became pirates. piracy became not a livelihood, but a lifestyle. And they go
against... Through generations.
Exactly. Through generations. And they start go against each other. They don't go against the Spanish only. Not even that, when the Spanish attack some of them, they don't go to help the others. So they see themselves as pirates first, and then as Jews.
The age-old question.
Who are you? What are you more, a pirate or a Jew? Now, another interesting...
So they must have come back to land and attended synagogue or something for the rabbis to have...
Of course,
to have influence on them.
Definitely. They've seen themselves, and that's true for the antiquities pirates and for the Renaissance pirates as well. They've seen themselves as Jews. Now, unlike today, there were not Jewish streams, they were not Orthodox, they were not progressive, they were not liberal, they were not nothing. They were Jews. And Jews are doing the mitzvot. And even if they're not doing all the mitzvot, they're still doing some of the mitzvot.
So you couldn't keep kosher on the ship.
Well, you know, it's actually it's easy. You know, most fish are kosher. It's not that difficult to find a kosher fish.
And you salt the meat.
Yeah, and salt the meat. But in any case, another interesting story. Cohen, right? We talked about him before. Moses Cohen Enriquez. And he was one of the biggest pirates in the 17th century. He robbed, now listen to this, he robbed gold and silver from the Spaniards in a net worth in today's value of $1 billion. $1 billion worth of gold and silver. That's a lot of money.
He was particular.
he was a particular. Yeah, he had he was a good pirate. He was.
He's a good businessman.
He's a good businessman. Now, in 1628, he went to with a Dutch admiral, Fiet Hein, to start robbing the Spaniards. In 1628, he started getting gold, and then he understand. This is a way to revenge the Spaniards, because the Spaniards, Spain itself is a poor country.
They robbed the South, the Americas.
Exactly. They got all the gold and silver from South America, and that's how they could rule the world, right? What Enriquez understand, if I'll get all the gold and silver, they won't have money. Spain will collapse. That will be the great vengeance. And Hein, the Dutch, also wanted to be... to revenge, because he was actually held captive on a Spanish pirate boat for 4 years. So he had his own agenda. They take, all the spoils. And then what do you do after you take so many spoils? It would be very difficult to go back to Europe, because you've really done too much. So Enriquez Cohen is occupying a small island next to Brazil. Next to the shores of Brazil, and establish his own dominion. Small dominion.
So first Jewish state.
Yeah, very small. He doesn't invite anybody there, but he that is sure. Later, he goes to Henry Morgan. Now, for those who know pirate history, he is one of the most famous pirates ever. And they were partners. This Cohen guy.
Cohen and Henry Morgan.
And Henry Morgan. They were partners. Now, another known pirate that apparently was Jewish, there's one historian, Keitzler, that claimed he's Jewish, is John Lafayette. Now, John Lafayette is, he's one of the most known pirates.
But he's French.
Yes, but you see, what is the nation of a pirate? The nation of a pirate is the nation that gives him protection. Sinan wasn't Turkish more than Davis was British. But he was British and he was Turkish. Why? Because that's the protection they received. Henry Morgan was British. But was he really British? Or was we don't know.
Which flag supported them?
Exactly. The flag that supported the pirate flag was their nation. Now, another ship... the Queen Esther, we said we'll talk about Queen Esther. So we had three ships. Hanavi Shmuel, Prophet Samuel, right? Malkat Esther, Queen Esther, and Magen Avraham, Shield of
Hebrew. But all in Hebrew.
All in Hebrew, and we'll get to Hebrew later. And they are going in 1628 and in other years, but that's the first year, against the Spanish Navy. And Rabbi Shmuel Falach, Samuel Falach, the head of the Moroccan Jewish community under the dominion of Holland, he is saying, how would you be a Jewish pirate, right? You need a manual. He's, you know, he's a rabbi. He sees Jews going and, you know, he sees those ships, Queen Esther. And, why, how do you observe mitzvot on the quarters
on the high seas
of Queen Esther? What do you do on Shabbat? What do you, well, you know, there's questions, good halachic questions there. So he says, kosher, you can keep kosher very easily. You need to maintain. If you have a you know, if you took somebody captive and he's not observing kosher, still you can, you need to try to give him kosher food and so on. And what do you do with the rob? You robbed, let's say you robbed 20 pieces of silver and 2 buckets of gold. What do you do with it? Now, Jewish halacha tells us that whatever we earn, we need to give 10% to the poor and to the needs of the community. And he says, once you chose piracy, now you're not allowed to do it on something you robbed. Because if you robbed something, it's not a real something you really earned. It's something immoral. So to take 10% to the poor and something immoral, it defeats the purpose of the mitzvah. But Rabbi Shmuel Falach says, Jewish pirates that are venging, that are really fighting against the Spaniards, it's their profession. It's their
That's their work.
That's their work, exactly. What will they give 10% out of? So they need to give 10% of that. And we have, you know, drawings, and we have on tombstones of Jewish sales with the names of Queen Esther's and so on. Very, very...
And where were they based then?
What do you... Jamaica. A lot of them came to Jamaica. A lot of them came to Jamaica, which is also interesting because Columbus himself passed there, and some people are saying that Columbus was actually a Marano himself. And what I want to finish with is that we need to remember that the Jewish pirates had power. One of them even moved to Louisiana and established an army in what will be the French New Orleans. He had an army in continental United States of himself. And when the piracy finished, when the East Coast of United States, you know, became safe, the Jewish pirates and their descendants became Americans. And they demanded equal rights. They didn't ask for equal rights of their European cousins. But they had swords, they had reputation, they had wealth, and they had power. The emancipation of the American Jewish, of the Jewish people in America, many people say it's because of the values of the American Revolution and so on. Many people give all sorts of reasons. A part of that is the fact that when the first people, British people, are coming to the Americans, when the Jews are asking for equal rights, behind them sit 2,000 pirates with swords. And then you receive equal rights.
And that's power speaks. Thank you, Udi, for that fascinating history. And thank you for listening. Don't forget to listen next Sunday at 10 past 10 to Radio Shalom. And if you've missed the program, go to www.planetaudio.org.nz/Radio Shalom.